Well, and I think that's right. I think we're borrowing an awful lot of concepts in non-asbestos cases from the asbestos cases, and you know, with Congress's response to sort of John's Mann bill and its sort of sister style cases, we have some of a construct. But here again, you know, and as you will hear in short order, do you have a statutory underpinning to what it is that the bankruptcy court is doing, or are you sort of back in the same position that the John's Manville court was in trying to cobble together or fashion remedy that fits? And I think it's we are still somewhat in the latter category of trying to cobble things together and fashion them. So I'm going to talk briefly on 105 injunctions and with a particular focus on, at least right now, on the 105 injunctions sort of from the outset of the case. In a lot of these cases, whether it's the opioid cases, the abuse cases, you know, obviously these are being driven by a proliferation of litigation all over the country in many instances. And in some where there have been, you know, initial cases that are tried with large judgments. So we are being faced with 105 injunctions. And typically what, you know, as we are probably familiar with from over time, are 105 injunctions that are extension of the automatic stay. So you see, you know, 362 being extended to various parties. And so, you know, a good example of it, and you'll hear me pick on the Boy Scouts case an awful lot, because I think it's a good case study in a number of things, especially given how current it is. With Arik being the expert on opioid, I'll let him chime in on the opioid differences. But Boy Scouts injunction, for example, there were three consent orders that were entered in the case that ran the 105 and 362 injunctions to all the non-debtor parties all the way through about the middle of this month. Now, there is a motion currently pending in the Boy Scouts case to lift that injunction with respect to some certain state court actions versus non-debtor defendants, and we'll see what happens. And Boy Scouts is looking to extend that injunction through March of next year. Now, well, let's call that the ordinary case. Now, let's turn to the Purdue instance, though, which was a little bit different. And in Purdue, which is not a super old issue, what was happening in Purdue is you had approximately 2,600 governmental actions and counting that were pending prior to the Purdue Pharma case being filed. Now, as we all know, 362B specifically carves out certain governmental action style actions, and so you can't normally, like you would, have a 105 tethered or moored with a 362 motion, because 362 doesn't apply to this. So there is no debtor stay to extend to these non-debtor entities. And in the Purdue case, what ultimately ended up happening, Judge Drain entered an order granting the 105 injunction and finding that the basis of it was because there was a settlement framework on the table. And at the time of the initial 105 injunction, there was about the proposed settlement framework had about $3 billion on the table of non-debtor overseas assets. It was primarily equity ownership assets of the Sackler family that ostensibly, you know, you couldn't reach even if you got judgments against those individuals, or they would be exceptionally difficult to repatriate, that were being put on the table. So there was, I call that the $3 billion carrot. That had since, at least within the last few weeks, I think DOJ announced that there's like an $8.3 billion proposed resolution. And so we'll see where that goes. But, you know, the bankruptcy court issued and the district court supported a injunction that was frankly not moored in 362. It is based solely and exclusively in Section 105. So that makes it very unique, I think, and very different, because it's not a Section 105 plus a bankruptcy section. So turning again quickly to third-party releases.
Can I just interrupt you for a second? Because for those of you who are listening, I just want to make sure that much of what you said about Purdue is correct, but there were two kind of factual things. I just want to make sure that if anyone then listening, just want to make sure we got that right. The $3 billion that you are correct, Judge Drain did mention that as a reason for approving the injunction, because half the country through the state AGs in 23 states were supporting the settlement framework. That $3 billion is not overseas assets. That $3 billion is coming from the Sacklers. It's a guaranteed payment. They did say they would use potentially the sale of their international assets to pay for it, but they had guaranteed it. The second thing is the DOJ settlement was an $8 billion unsecured claim. It's not a $8 billion admin claim. And so they've agreed to take cents on the dollar, except they do get a $225 million cash payment.